got nothing from nobody in no time. Until I get something from somebody sometime. But I'll never do nothing for nobody no time. When summer comes all cool and clear, and my friends see me drawing near, who says, come in, have some beer? Nobody. When I was in that...
Hello, I'm Mark Steiner. Welcome back. And, of course, Bert Williams passed away on this day in 1922. A little of his voice back from a rare recording, a 1913 recording of Nobody by Bert Williams. Remind you, on the way back to this conversation, that the Mark Steiner Show is brought to you in part by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, offering a full range of financial services. MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, is helping its members and its community prosper. When you invest in yourself, MeQ invests in you. And remember, it's a credit union, not just a bank. It belongs to you, and money comes back in the end. So, more information, www.mecu.com, or you can go to steinershow.org and click on their banner, MeQ, Baltimore's Credit Union. We are here in studio with Jeff Singer, founder and former executive director of Healthcare for the Homeless, instructor now at the University of Maryland School of Social Work.
Good morning.
I might as well get you a cot, let you stay here, coming on the show so much these days. Melody Simmons is with us. Melody Simmons is an independent journalist, reporter for the Baltimore Brew, with over, I don't know how many years of experience, 30, 35 years?
29.
29. No. Everything is 29. 29 years.
A lot of years. Thankfully.
And one of Baltimore's great investigative reporters, and has written this piece in the Brew, City Selling Baltimore's High-Rise Public Housing to private entities. And so when I saw that, hit me immediately, because I have been saying for a long time, as I look at this gigantic blue high-rise building that sits in what is now being called the Station North Arts. Do I have that right, Gunnery? Station North Arts.
An entertainment district. Mm-hmm.
And I see this building and see all this new construction going up on North Avenue. Between that and what people call Little Korea, which is where mainly Korean restaurants and community has places, I kept looking at this building and going, you know, they're going to get rid of this place because they don't want poor, disabled, older, and younger black folks walking the streets in their new arts district. Like, this is the gut feeling. I could be wrong. People say I go over the top with this a little bit.
Location.
So what do you think at 410-319-8888? So this story, tell us about the story and how you came upon it. What do you think this means?
Well, we started hearing some buzz that this was going to be happening. I talked to Jeff just a little while ago in the green room. He hadn't heard it, which is interesting to me because it's been percolating in Baltimore since around Thanksgiving with some of the advocates. The story published on thebaltimorebrew.com on February 27th, and it basically outlines a program, a federal legislation set up, Rental Assistance Demonstration, or RAD. And basically, that is a law that was passed by Congress in 2011 but became effective this January, where housing authorities could apply for funding or the right, or really it comes down to Section 8 vouchers and low-income tax credits, to basically sell public housing units in high-rises to private developers. And Baltimore's going at it at full force.
So what does that mean? What do we think that means, going at it full force? I mean, you've been talking about this for a while. I mean, one of the things that you said to me on the phone last night as we were talking, Melody, was that many of the residents are happy they may be in Section 8 because that means they can move anywhere in America. But there's some – here's your comment on that, Jeff, and what you think is – some of the story we're not what we need to kind of focus on analytically here.
RAD seems to be the radical restructuring of the public housing model. In fact, it's the elimination of a significant portion of the public housing. Now, there's been a long trend in doing that. In the past 20 years, we've lost about 22% of all the public housing in the United States. And Baltimore has been, you know, riding that wave through the HOPE 6 program and Move to Opportunity. Baltimore has lost at least 3,000 units that we've documented of public housing. The city has the right to have 17,000 units of public housing. It only operates about 10,400 units of public housing currently. Now, public housing is really, really important to assure that people who can't get into the housing market are not homeless. Now, we haven't done a really good job on this. In 1937, the National Housing Act began to create significant numbers of public housing units. Something over a million, about 1.2 million units have been created since then. In 1949, the federal government, Congress, expressed the goal of legislation is to assure that every American family has a safe and secure place to live. That was a goal in 1949. By the way, it's no longer a goal because Bill Clinton signed legislation in 1996 that eliminated that goal. So we don't have that goal any longer on a national level. Certainly as a city, we've not been promoting the creation of additional affordable housing units. And this is another way to assure that there are fewer public housing units, fewer affordable housing units, because inevitably what happens is that developers will turn these units into private market units and will lose access for folks who are on the street or who face evictions, and we know how many tens of thousands there are.
Well, also I'd like to add to Jeff's comments. So this is there are so many unanswered questions about this RAD program, the impact and the ultimate impact on public housing in Baltimore. We just don't know, and the Housing Authority is not answering any questions.
What do you mean? That when we wrote them to ask them to join this conversation or a conversation next week, which we're going to come back to in a deeper way next week on this subject for a longer segment, their comment, if I don't have the email in front of me, but their comment was that it's too early to talk about this.
Well, they might say it's too early, but I will tell you that there are a lot of high rises where this is already in motion. One of them is at Bell Park over in Park Heights, which is an 11-story building with 275 units. And Landex Corporation, which is a heavy political donor to the mayor, and Jack Young, president of the city council, is already been given the nod to go in and start doing its work.
Where's this high rise?
Park Heights.
Park Heights and where?
I don't know the
Belvedere.
Exact address right now.
Belvedere.
Park Heights and Belvedere.
Belvedere.
Yeah, it's called Bell Park, and it's
Bell Park, right?
Yeah,
right.
Belvedere
right.
Park Heights.
Right. Oh,
right.
Duh.
So,
right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So they're already moving in there. So they say it's too early, but it's not too early. They're down the road.
The exact quote from Sharon Porter in our email to my producer Mark Henry was: "It's premature for us to discuss it at this time. We'll be happy to discuss this at a later, more appropriate date."
Well, let me comment on that, because the legislation that enables this to happen requires public discussion and public hearings of this sort of change.
Have we had any?
None.
So how can they do this without a public hearing?
They're doing it. And they won't answer questions about why.
I mean,
Just saying.
I'm stumbling over my words because I'm flabbergasted. I'm not really stunned because things happen all the time, but this is a huge move because, you know, with the diminution of funds for public housing that started under Ronald Reagan and have gotten less and less since 1980 when he began this process, this new federal legislation, RAD, which stands again for
Rental Assistance Demonstration Program.
Which they always say these great names, but what it means is selling our public housing to private developers. And I think that what you're saying here as well, it's really important to kind of push this point a little further, Jeff, is that when a private developer gets his hands on, their hands on a large building with potential apartments, units, condominiums, it's not going to stay housing for the poor.
Very likely it's not. Now, there are some provisions in this law that promote it staying as affordable housing, but that's not the same as it staying as public housing. And once you privatize public housing, there's no way it'd go back. And believe me, the tenants lose.
But what about the Section 8? Tenants say, we'll have to have Section 8 because that means I can move to Florida or L.A. or Arizona.
Nationally, about 50% of all Section 8 certificates that are awarded to poor folks are given back to housing authorities because they can't find a landlord to accept it or a unit that's adequate for them. So for each individual person, it sounds like nirvana to have the ability to move wherever you want, but you don't really have that ability. We know, and we were talking to Melody about this earlier, there are very few private handicapped accessible units in Baltimore which have landlords willing to accept a Section 8 certificate. So if you have disabilities, you're very unlikely to find a place to live. Now, if you can find one, you might really enjoy it, but you also might end up homeless.
Well, they're very vulnerable. This is a very vulnerable population. And I will say that if you recall, during the 90s, a lot of the public housing high-rises were torn down and demolished under the Dan Henson era with Mayor Schmoke. And so what's left now are mixed population buildings that house seniors and disabled low-income tenants. So these are the kind of tenants that right now are being threatened by this program. And I use that word very lightly, but there's not been enough questions answered to know how it's going to shake out. I think if there was a dialogue, if there was a forum and a public discussion about it, people might understand it a little bit more and there might be some knowledge to move forward with.
I mean, because the result of what happened under Mayor Schmoke, the taking down the high-rise, many people lauded it at the moment. We were excited about it because it tore down these places that people were talking about where crime infested and people get, you know, the dangerous places to live. And there was always an argument back then, well, why don't we do something to secure it? I remember for a while they had the Food of Islam was part of the Nation of Islam. Their security people were patrolling, and when they were patrolling, crime was actually kind of went down because people had a lot of respect for the fruit of Islam, and they were actually doing a very nonviolent way of this presence of, you know, and things like to deal with it and talking to young people who were involved. But there was a whole controversy then about the efficacy of tearing down these houses.
Absolutely. There were 4,000 units that were destroyed through Hope 6. 3,000 of those units were never replaced. There was not a one-to-one replacement. The folks who lived in them were given Section 8 certificates. Many of them couldn't use them, about half, as far as we know. And I can guarantee you that some of them ended up in the waiting room at Healthcare for the Homeless. That even fewer units were available to single adults. Some of the family units were replaced. So the impact of Hope 6, which has been studied, by the way, as has another program, Moving to Opportunity, which has a similar effect, the impact of these programs has been studied. And they have more negative consequences than positive, as best I can tell. There's an interesting report by the Human Improvement Project and a couple of other groups, the Advancement Project, of the possible consequences of RAD, the rental the program we're talking about today. And it shows some health impacts that are negative, like you've broken apart a community. And you've increased stress on people who now have to find a place to live, and that's really hard to do.
When we first went on the air, as I said, 21 years ago yesterday was our first show. And our very third show in 1993, the third week in March, because we're only on weekly then, an hour and a half at night, was a town hall meeting that we did with then Dan Henson and leaders of the tenants groups in public housing. And the issue that you're talking about was raised then, about what's going to happen to these units. Where are people going to go? What are the plans? Where's Hope 6 taking us? And, you know, and I mean, just a disclaimer here. I mean, I've known Dan Henson since we were kids, and I like him a great deal as a friend, but we were at loggerheads at that moment when he was head of housing over this issue, and we pushed it very hard on the air. And I think maybe it's time to kind of go back to really question this thing maybe in that kind of format, because we need to do that. I mean, we need to know what's happening. We need to know where we're going with public housing, not just affordable housing, because they are two different things, as you said, and we lack both.
Yes.
Melanie, well, I'm also thinking as we're talking that if you drive through a lot of these communities in the city and you see the vacant boarded up houses, many of them are scattered site houses owned by the housing authority that have gone into disrepair, that are vacant, that are blighted, and they're off the market. Now they are in the vacants to value program and being sold to private investors. So there's further dilution of the stock right now through that program.
Let me get a comment here on the air, 410-319-8888. William, welcome to the show.
Yes, that's good. Good morning,
good
sir.
Morning. Good morning, William.
Question. I live in a multi-tenant rental building, and it's changed hands. And within a month or two, the rent had went up to a large number. And I would like to know if there's a number that I can call to find out whether or not that percentage of increase was legal for them to do, to, you know.
Is your building a public housing building?
It's a privately owned building. Yes, it's in the historical area up at Red Druid Hill Park, Auchentrolley Terrace area. It's about 12 apartments in this building here.
Good.
The new landlord bought the building, and right away he shot my rent straight up a couple of $100s.
Wow.
Wow.
Jeff?
I'd like to know if that's something right. I could do about that, because I spoke with him about it, and he wanted more than what I told him. I said, well, I can't afford to do that. So he knocked $50 off. So he's telling me that was something he just threw a figure out there and hoping I'd grab for it.
Given that about 30 years ago the citizens of Baltimore voted for rent control, but the law was overturned by a court, we don't have rent control now, and I doubt that there are any limitations on what a private landlord can charge. If there's public dollars in the building, there may be some, and perhaps you should contact Sharon Porter at the Baltimore City Department of Housing and Community Development.
Well, this is the kind of situation that possibly could arise under the RAD in years to come. We don't really know, but if there are private owners of the buildings and...
let me just hold you, because we have Paul Graziano's on the line. We only have a few minutes left to get him on. He just called in. Paul, welcome.
Yeah, Mark.
Hey, Paul, we only have a few minutes left, but please.
Well, there's a lot of misinformation flying around there, and as I said before, I wanted to fully discuss this when we had additional information from HUD. But let me be clear, I don't want our tenants running away in panic here, because there's so much disinformation, it's unbelievable. But
well, it's good that you're answering some questions, Commissioner.
First of all, we have met with the residents of every single one of the high-rise, as is required, and have met on more than one occasion with the residents in those specific buildings and the citywide resident advisory board. They wholeheartedly embrace this program. The statute, if you investigate it further, it would be clear that it is required that the residents be allowed to stay in their homes and that the rents must remain the same. And we are also putting a provision in all of the contracts where it's quite possible we'll be part owner of the building, but if not, there will be a reverter clause that after the 15-year tax credit compliance period, the housing authority will be able to take the properties back. The other thing that has not been spoken here at all is the fact that we have approximately $3 to $4 million per year in capital funds from Washington to upgrade these buildings. And the need in these buildings is hundreds of millions of dollars. By doing this program, we can do in 2.5 years, $320 million plus in capital repairs. That means renovating everybody's apartment entirely. That means replacing elevators, replacing roofs, doing all the exterior work, as you mentioned, Mark, at the Van Story Branch building. We're having to spend $5 million just to redo the exterior of that building so it will be waterproof and energy efficient, and we are not selling it to some developer for market rate housing.
So Paul, we have to take a break here because we have a legal break to make. But what I'd like to, I mean, we did call and try to, we wanted to have you on for this discussion.
Yeah, to answer some questions.
And to talk with us. But what I would offer up, Paul, is if you have the time, we can open our program tomorrow morning.
No, we're not doing it tomorrow morning. I told you, I sent a message. We're working out some final details with HUD. We'll be communicating the full plan in within a couple of weeks. The point is we've met with all of the immediately affected people. All the residents are fully aware, and they have been told that they will not be displaced. They will not be given a voucher to move out. I don't know where you're getting that from.
We're getting that from the tenants, Commissioner.
Commissioner, we will be back. We really have to go. We'll be back to your office, though, and I'm glad you called in, but we look forward to the time when you can actually join us here for even a brief moment to clear up what you think are falsehoods and what we were talking about and to talk in greater detail. So take care. Thank you so much for joining. I wish we could stay on longer, but we'd have another segment coming up that we have to go to because it's scheduled for the coming up, so we'll be right back. I want to thank our guests for being here, Jeff Singer, Melody Simmons, Commissioner Graziano. Thank you so much for calling in.
Thanks, Mark.
Thank you, Mark.